Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Locked On Timberwolves, where we're going to do a little something different tonight.
Interesting.
Tom Schreier in the studio, you heard him, co-founder of Cold Omaha, associate of mine, boss of mine, big meeting tomorrow, by the way.
I know.
11 o'clock.
Hey, we haven't had a meeting in like 3 weeks.
Things are happening. We have Margaret Hooper calling in.
Perfect basketball name.
From Portland. So
she lives in San Francisco. She's a Blazers fan.
Oh, okay.
However. Yep.
And friend of Tom's, Blazers fan. Wolves lost to the Blazers last night, 95-86?
89.
I knew it was one of those numbers. I'm dyslexic. Give me a break. CJ McCollum scores 43. Chris Dunn plays arguably his best game as a pro. Finishes with 11 points. Also had 4 assists, 3 blocks, and 3 rebounds. Had the play where he made Shabazz Napier look silly, threw it around him. Did you see it?
I'm trying to remember. Was the second half?
Yep, went left hand, threw it around his back, went around Napier's right, got it on the baseline, threw it out to Gorgui Zhang. Highlight reel blew up on Twitter. It's on SportsCenter's top plays. Not quite sure he did it on purpose, but
hey, it worked.
We'll take what we can get. Oh, phone's ringing. I will let Tom take over the dialogue, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so just to be clear with people, and I told Zach this, I watched the first quarter of this game at my house, listened to the second quarter on the way to Shamrocks, which is out in St. Paul, if you haven't been, and then watched it at a bar, and then I watched the second half again today. But yeah, we got Margaret Hooper here on the phone. She's a big, big Blazers fan, and was gloating about a team that was kind of inconsistent that now has beaten the Minnesota Timberwolves, who just consistently don't play in the third quarter. Is she live?
Oh, yeah. We're live. We're rocking.
Can you hear us?
I can. Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Fine, thanks. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year. It's been a while since I heard your voice.
It has.
So I was saying, you have a cold, Zach. I don't know if you're hungover or just slept a lot today, but this will be an interesting podcast.
What? My answer is yes.
Yeah, so Margaret, did you catch any of this game, or did you just kind of follow up in the paper this morning?
I caught a little bit last night. I just I was running some errands yesterday before this cold kind of knocked me out. Caught the highlights mostly, and was super impressed with CJ McCollum because that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, so Zach covered the game last night, and basically your report in the morning was CJ McCollum beats the Wolves.
Yeah, it wasn't even fair. I mean, the guy is too hard to defend around screen and roll action. The Blazers were without their best player, so I think everybody was sort of kicking back. You know, their best player being Damian Lillard, obviously. Everyone's sort of kicking back going,
yeah,
well, this should go well. And then, lo and behold, CJ McCollum does CJ McCollum things. I do want to say, though, that Chris Dunn suppressed him in the second quarter. The Blazers just scored 13 points in the second, and then...
Because Rubio had trouble with him, right?
Rubio had trouble with him in the third, and Dunn didn't go back in until the 1 minute mark of the third quarter, and by then the damage had been done. So it was quite the individual effort. It didn't feel like he would miss ever, and he didn't.
Is this typical of him? Do you know, Margaret? Have you been following that?
It can be. I know that he and Damian have a relationship that's unlike really anything I've ever seen. So I think he takes it personally when Damian's out to say, hey, I've got to step up. I've got to be that guy. I don't think anybody quite expected last night because I think that's his career high. But, you know, I think being the primary ball handler when Damian is out, that means something to him. So I wasn't all that surprised. I was pretty impressed because they've had a rough past couple weeks.
Yeah, they're 2-2 now I keep getting those two confused, Lillard's absence with wins over the Sacramento Kings and losses to the San Antonio Spurs, and I forget the other one. But
he's hard to coach. I don't know if you've caught that lately. Didn't George Karl call him out in the book?
Well, he didn't call him out in the book. I think he called him out in some press he was doing for the book.
Oh, my God.
They asked him, they were asking him, like, you know, what he thought about teams this year, and he happened to mention Portland, and Stotts was not having any of it.
Yeah.
He was heated.
Yeah, you sent me that on Twitter, just kind of the response he had, and I don't know, have you covered Karl and Stotts, Zach?
Me? I've covered George Karl in his last season as a coach, and when he did his pregame availability, I'm looking at him, I'm going, this guy is decrepit, and he's going to die soon.
I mean, literally, first of all, it's almost worse that he called him out after the book, because it's like he's just doubling down on, and I haven't read it. I know Bill Simmons read it, and literally just like said everything George Karl said in his podcast, like that was his most recent podcast, was just summarizing the book. But it's almost worse that he's doubling down on kind of going after people in the league. And you're right, Margaret, you'd point out that, you know, Stotts is really reserved, I think is the right way to say it. He's really great, at least when he's with the media. I've probably covered maybe two or three games with him. And George Karl, the last game I covered when he was coaching, he literally sat down, which I've never seen other than the guys who do the video. And I was like, dude, like, you're just going to sit here? And he was like, yep, this is happening. So, I mean, the reaction from both people don't surprise me. I think George Karl probably is just burning all his bridges and going out with a bang, I guess, because he's never going to get a job in the NBA again. And Stotts, I think even in his comments, you could tell he was irate, but even was kind of measured in how he expressed his anger towards, you know, Karl in that comment.
And that's Stotts for sure. And I think Stotts was in his first year when they drafted Damian. So they have kind of like CJ and Damian, they have a very special relationship. And I think he took that personally because, as he said, Karl doesn't know any of his players. He doesn't know how much it means to Damian to win and how hard it is for him to be out. And as I thought Rachel Nichols said it best, it sounds like the book is a front cover, a back cover, and a can of gasoline and matches in the middle.
I think this is worth pointing out. Obviously, we're talking a lot about the Blazers because they just played the Wolves, but also because these teams like the Nuggets, Blazers, are standing in the way of Minnesota really kind of getting the playoffs. And there's all this talk that, you know, Britt Robson, a prominent writer here, said 47 wins, a guy who's usually pretty negative about the team. Vegas had it about 40 and a half for the over-under.
Tim Bontemps, Washington Post, had him about 50.
50 wins. Yeah. Jeez Louise. Yeah, so, you know, the Wolves are 0-6 in the division right now. The Blazers, 5-1, kind of knocking on the door. They're the 10th seed right now. Nuggets, 9th. Kings, 8th. So the Wolves will have to beat teams like this. What was your guess? I mean, it's one NBA game, but Margaret, going into this game, just given kind of how inconsistent the Blazers have been and how hot they started and how cold they were going into it.
I think it's just hard to say because everything that happened last year just kind of felt like fate in a way, and it's so cliche. They could very easily win this game last night and go in and get torched by Golden State. Because they're, you know, that's who they're playing on, I think, tomorrow night.
Correct.
But I think it's just really hard, and I wish I had an answer to how I thought the game was going to turn out. I'm impressed that they've stayed as kind of even-killed. That game a couple nights, that game against, I think it was San Antonio, that was tough. They had some long road trips over the past few weeks, and I think that probably took their toll. They probably took their toll on them. I have no idea, to be honest. It is kind of a funny team the way they're put together. They spent a lot of money this offseason. I didn't necessarily think they were going to match the contract for Allen Crabbe. I like Allen Crabbe. I think he's great. Is he worth $75 million? Probably not. But it was just, it's a team where you can't quite tell exactly, you know, it's Damian and a lot of other guys. And Damian and I think CJ's right below him, but the rest of the guys, it's this mishmash, and sometimes they play great, and sometimes they just look completely out of sync.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the road trip thing, because one of the Dave Benz, the play-by-play guy for the Wolves, joked around with Terry Stotts right after Stotts' pregame availability ended. He goes, how do you like that San Antonio, Minnesota, Golden State road trip? And I'm thinking to myself, it doesn't geographically make too much sense as far as travel goes. But I'm glad you bring up Crabbe and sort of the array of players that they paid over the summer. I mean, you have a team last year who, by all accounts, overachieved, and they barely made the cap floor.
Yeah, they cut salary, right?
They barely made the cap floor. And so for them to go out and sign Evan Turner to a grip of money and to match the contract on Crabbe, like you said, and Mason Plumlee, I mean, they have a bunch of guys who do the dirty work, and they spent more money than perhaps necessary, and now they're not doing as well as they were last year. So they're a really perplexing team, especially from afar. I can't even imagine following them closely or intently. I'd be scratching my head very often.
We were scratching our heads over, like, when the signings happened. As you said, they were a team of people who nobody really wanted last year, because the team itself as a whole is pretty much the same as last year. There are a couple pieces who are here and a couple pieces who aren't here. The Turner signing really confused a lot of people, because he does the same thing as Damian and CJ, so it just kind of didn't make a lot of sense. I think he's had some flashes, but both he and Crabbe, we've been able to kind of see develop. I still don't think he's worth $75 million, but it just, they didn't make sense, and now they're at near the top of the overall salary cap, I think, for a team like this. Just looks strange.
Yeah, and the Evan Turner is perplexing, because he's one of those, I mean, he's among the bottom of the barrel in terms of overall plus minus this season, and yet he gave nearly 30 solid minutes last night. He was 5 of 7 from the field. He scores 11 points. He finishes with a team low, negative 10 in terms of plus minus. But he does, you know, Tom Thibodeau called him one of the most underrated players in the league,
really?
Just with the way that he can defend both guards and forwards, his size. I really like Al-Farouq Aminu, even though he didn't shoot well last night. I think he brings he was guarding Karl Anthony Towns last night, and he's way undersized. He didn't shoot the ball well, but he's out there willing to do the dirty work, finishes with 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and 2 steals. It's just some like to think that point guards or jump shooting teams can't win the championship, as the old adage goes. I think Golden State showed everybody who thinks that otherwise, but it's a team built around two predominantly ball-handling guards and a bunch of people around them willing to do the dirty work, and I think it's certainly commendable.
I think you mentioned Aminu. He was out for maybe 2 weeks, maybe longer, at the beginning of the season. I think that took a bigger toll on the team than a lot of people would like to, outside of Portland, would like to
totally
kind of
agree
that it does.
Oh yeah,
I think it was really, they had a tough time, and they started out pretty well, and then all of a sudden he went out. I think it was a calf or a back or something like that, and they just kind of fell apart. And it was a signing last year that surprised a lot of people, but Neil O'Shea was the GM with, I think, the Clippers when he was drafted, so he has a relationship with them, and he wanted to come to Portland. He did really well last year, but I think not having him for two and a half weeks was pretty tough.
No, and they've been waiting for him to come back, and he did, like you said, miss a lot of time, and then when he came back, he was back for a little, and then he missed more time, but now he seems to be back, obviously still playing his way into game shape, finishes 1 of 7 from the field last night, so just not a great performance, but he gave the work on the defensive end. I think both teams relied on their starters heavily. Neither team played no combination of two bench guys for longer than 20 minutes apiece. So just I thought it was a really well-fought game. And
in the bottom line, I mean, you look at those, the first and fourth quarters were pretty even. And the second the Wolves pulled away, it was 26 to 13. Even with that 32-15 third quarter, which, Margaret, I don't know if you know this, this is like Wolves basketball, where they literally play great in the first half and then usually dig a huge hole in the third quarter and try to make it up in the fourth.
But yeah, it keeps everybody on their toes.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, they usually fall. I don't know what the equivalent is, but usually it doesn't work out for them. But yeah, no, I actually thought Levine, now the Wolves in general did not shoot well, 7 of 23 from beyond the arc. But Levine was clutch towards the end, and it just seemed like McCollum just matched him every time that he scored and kind of put pressure on Portland.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, Levine was playing his worst game of the season up until that fourth quarter, and even then, in the fourth quarter, he shoots 2 of 6, 2 of those being three-pointers, key three-pointers late
in the
game.
And very tough, like one kind of leaning into it and one fading back right off a pick.
But with less than 2 minutes left, it's 88-84, and Wiggins all of a sudden thinks he can go, quote unquote, hero ball on the bit.
Oh, I know.
And he drives, gets all the way to the basket, throws it to no one in particular. It's intercepted. Portland 2 points the other way. On the ensuing possession, the Wolves' next offensive possession, LaVine goes and does the same thing, and all of a sudden it's 92-84. Tibbs calls timeout, and the game's virtually over.
Tibbs has said repeatedly, it's different than the Flip Saunders philosophy where he just ran plays to kind of get guys going or whatever. If a play was run for you, you're taking the shot. With Thibodeau, he's saying the play is just for you to make a decision, right? And in both those cases, Wiggins driving to the ball, like, he was trapped. Like, there's no way he's going to score on that possession. He just has to pass. So his job is not to score. It's to make a better play. And LaVine, kind of the same thing. Now I'm starting to believe, though, that LaVine not only, for a while, I think he just kind of played without context. I think now there's a clutch factor, if there wasn't one earlier. Like, that game kind of showed me enough where I'm like, he must know the stakes of this, and he's dropping it in. Do you feel the same way, courtside?
Yeah, I do. I want to just transition into, I mean, Tibbs is talking post-game about how you just need to make the simple play, and he's obviously talking about Towns, who was double-teamed all night, but it's as if Towns wanted to make sure everybody in the building saw that he was being double-teamed, triple-teamed sometimes, and that he needed to pass out of it. And it's like, dude, you know the double's coming. Just kick it out.
Exactly. And that's something Tibbs addressed earlier, too, in the season, just that the defenses have changed, and this is why these players need to adapt, and they can't think that they can go into each game and do the same thing. And I don't know, Margaret, are the Blazers known as a defensive team? At least just looking at the film last night, like, they, especially in the third, they just stalled the Wolves off, you know, to a crawl.
Listen to you looking at the film.
I'm all watching the game again.
Because they're not at all. No. Defense, it's been kind of...
They're one of the worst teams
mediocre
in the league.
Under kind of a joke. I mean, you're talking about a team where the two centers are Mason Plumlee and Miles Leonard.
Yeah.
Leonard.
They're the second worst team in the league in terms of points per 100 possessions given up, behind only the Los Angeles Lakers.
Oof.
I mean, they brought in the biggest disappointment probably has been the fact that Festus Ezeli, who they brought in and they were super excited coming in from Golden State, hasn't played a game this year. I think the fact that they are where they are, considering that they don't really have a true center, and I grew up a Maryland Terrapins fan, so it's very hard for me to root for someone like Mason Plumlee, who went to Duke. But he's done an admirable job. But he's, you know, this is, they don't have a really true knockdown big man who can, you know, put his back to the basket and disrupt things, where a healthy Ezeli probably could do that better. But just hasn't, his knee has continuously bothered him, which is really unfortunate. So it's, sorry, my cat is trying to get out the window. I think it's really,
can't make it up.
It's really frustrating and perplexing, and their defense is just bad.
You must thoroughly, I mean, do you have a Steve Blake poster hanging in your residence?
I do not, but I can't believe I'm about to say this. When I was in high school, he and Juan Dixon were playing for the Blazers, and so I went to a game against San Antonio, I think, in a Maryland sweatshirt with a poster that said, Rip City loves the Terps.
And this is a handmade poster, I imagine, because they don't sell. Are there pictures?
I'd have to ask my parents. I hope so, because I think it's hilarious.
Do your due diligence and find those, because that was that happens to be coincidentally one of my favorite teams of all time, just because I did not like Indiana for whatever reason. I forgot. Was it 90? I think it was 98 or 2000 when they won the title?
It was 2000. I moved out west to Portland in 2001. So it was right before I moved, they won the title. It was pretty fun.
Depending on how old you are, this may depress you, but I was 10, and like you, I did not particularly enjoy Duke at the time, and I just have a very vivid memory of Jason Williams turning around to get the play from Coach K and Steve Blake sneaking up behind him and stealing the ball, and it was very the emotion in the pageant. You have to know exactly what I'm talking about if you're a Steve Blake fan.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And the year before, I was heartbroken when Duke scored 10 points in the last minute
to beat the Terps
in the Final Four. That was really That was pretty heartbreaking.
I think yeah, that would be heartbreaking. And now Maryland's in the Big Ten, and I don't really care about college basketball that much.
Although the Gophers-Purdue game,
we did watch it in the media room.
Okay.
We were watching.
Because I was going to say, I went from watching the Vikings game, which was meaningless, but they beat Chicago pretty bad, to this amazing Gopher-Purdue game. Purdue, number 15 in the country. Gophers had won 8 games last year and took Michigan State to overtime in the previous game, but goes into overtime and beats Purdue in Purdue, West Lafayette or whatever it is, and then goes to the Wolves game, and the Wolves game was kind of, I'd say a little bit of a letdown, but it was...
A lot bit?
Yeah, although...
Thibodeau called it a total and complete breakdown.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was not pleased.
Oh, him... I mean, the problem for him is that he went from like a situation where he won immediately into Chicago to not only just losing here in Minnesota, and he had to know there was a challenge here, but losing the same damn way. Like, I'm sitting there with guys who don't know much about the Timberwolves. Like, I'm in St. Paul, obviously not, you know.
Not a basketball town over there.
Not Wolves territory.
Although the Lynx are coming.
Yeah.
They're coming across the river.
To show how much, like, they ignore the Wolves in there, it is a very Minnesota-centric bar. They have, like, a Michael Floyd jersey, McDonough, like, any of these players, often Cretan guys who have gone on to play pro. Maurer, of course. And then they have a logo for the Vikings, the Twins, and the Wild. They do not have a Timberwolves logo in there, and I had to ask to have the game turn on. But even sitting there with the people we were with, every one of them knew the Timberwolves blow it in the third quarter. Like, this has just become a reputation.
In defense of St. Paul, the Timberwolves are the worst NBA franchise that has ever existed. I'm just saying. They're awful.
But yeah, Margaret, I don't know if you know about this divide between the river. In fact, I've invited you out to this bar once, and you were like, I don't cross the river.
Yeah. The Twin Cities are comprised of St. Paul and Minneapolis, and they are separated by the mighty Mississippi River. And one side of the... I don't go over to the other side.
It goes both ways. Those people tend not to come over to...
They play something called hockey on the St. Paul side.
Yeah, and the ice surface.
I'd prefer... What's the other game they play that's in the Winter Olympics? That's like...
Curling?
Yeah, curling. I will cross the river to play curling.
St. Paul Curling Club.
I will do that. All right, Margaret, a couple more very important questions. We'll get you out of here. What is your opinion of Burger King?
I actually have not eaten fast food since I was 15.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I had Burger King on the way here, and it was great. And did you or did you who? Okay, of the Lakers or the Lakers of Portland's players, which one partied the hardest on New Year's Eve?
You cut out just a second there. Did you say of the Blazers players?
Yeah, which of the Blazers players partied the hardest on New Year's Eve?
Oh, it's got to be Myers Leonard.
Say more, please.
Oh, he's just an. I mean.
He's the guy with the Game of Thrones haircut? Yeah, I think so.
Yes, he's the guy with the Game of Thrones haircut.
Yes.
I just think he thinks he's hilarious, so I feel like even if nobody else is with him, he'd be the one partying the hardest on New Year's Eve.
He's the guy who said things about Boogie Cousins' antics after the last two.
They have the weirdest kind of, not using air quotes, rivalry I've ever seen. Because... Myers is great, but Myers is not great. And Boogie Cousins went off for 55.
Oh,
it's
so
weird. I think it's bizarre.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, and I'm glad you... Do you watch Game of Thrones? Because I don't think I'm getting much from Tom Schreier in the Game of Thrones regard.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a Tim Fakeless topic.
I've seen Game of Thrones. I know. It's why I knew who I was talking about.
Yeah, he's definitely got the Game of Thrones haircut. Well, that's awesome. Margaret?
Yes, he does, yeah.
Margaret Hooper, we appreciate your time and coming on and talking to us with the Blazers. What do you, I mean, you're in San Francisco, correct me if I'm not mistaken.
You're still there, right? Or are you in New York?
No, I'll be in New York next March-ish.
Jeez. Okay. And I thought moving back and forth from Phoenix and Minneapolis a couple times was something. Baltimore I don't even know.
Well, I moved from Baltimore when I was 12, so it's been a while since I had to do a move like this one.
Well, need I remind you, find that Rip City Loves the Terps.
Yes.
Because that's very important. It might go on the show page might, I mean,
I'll ask my parents. I can make no promises, but I'll ask my parents.
What are you going to?
They still have some sort of pictures.
What are you going to do on the 4th for the Blazers Warriors matchup? I assume that'll be fun, and I assume if Lillard was even close to being able to return, that he will be back for this matchup in a couple days with the Warriors.
I hope he's back. I know that it's driving him crazy not to be able to play because, contrary to Mr. Carl, he is not the reason that they are having trouble this year. I'll probably catch it on TV. Unfortunately, it starts right as I'm finishing work. But it's either going to be really close. I still don't think they're going to win. It's either going to be really close or they're just going to be totally out of sorts. And I'm hoping that it's on the really close side because they do always seem to every other game or so, they seem to play really, the Blazers seem to play up to the Warriors, with the exception of the game last year where Damian put on a show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They don't have a Blazers bar in San Francisco or anything like that? You haven't found it yet?
There's got to be, right?
No. I for some reason, haven't totally gotten into finding fellow Blazers fans. I know that they exist in San Francisco. But I probably will be catching that one on TV.
You never know. If you might be surprised what you find, because there's an establishment in Minneapolis that Wolves fans like to gather at. It's a Cleveland Browns bar. In Minneapolis. So you never know. You can't rule it out.
Well, if I can find the Portland Timbers fans like I did last year, I should.
Oh, there you go.
Be able to find the Blazers fans.
There you go, Margaret. We really appreciate your time and coming on.
You got it, guys.
Yep, thank you.
Bye.
One quick Wolf-centric observation. And then
well, that would be good because this is the Locked On Timberwolves podcast.
Yeah, right. I know. We went Maryland and Duke and all that. Hey, great basketball talk, if nothing else.
I mean, her last name's Hooper.
I know. Isn't that great?
She should be a regular contributor.
No, she knows. She's on Twitter, I think, 24/7.
What would be the handle there, Tom?
Miss Margarita is her handle, if you want to follow her. She does a lot of sports.
Will you spell Margarita for me?
That's a good question.
M-A-R-G.
Sorry, Giles just, this is a, sorry, a wild base thing, but Giles goes.
What's a wild?
A hockey team here.
Up until entering last night's game against the Blazers, the Wild had the Wolves had a longer winning streak than the Minnesota Wild, did you know?
Yeah, that's right, after their, it's Miss M-A-R-G-A-R-I-T-A 88. So Miss Margarita 88. I would love it if her Twitter just blows up after this. I just think Giles sighs really loud on his podcast and just tweets at me.
What's a Wild? The
it's a hockey team in St. Paul near Shamrocks. Dave Brower, yeah.
Did you see his tweet? It was on New Year's Eve. And he said, he quote tweeted somebody who said, "The Wolves have a longer winning streak than the Wild." David Brower quote tweets that he just says, "Hero."
That, by the way, and I know we plug Britt a lot here, but the Britt and Brower podcast is really, really good.
Britt is going to come on this week.
Is he?
I just decided, yes.
I'm excited.
I've got his number. He's coming on, whether it be by telephone or by...
No, he is such... Everyone who is a Wolves fan should read his columns. I understand they are very long, but it is definitely worth a read.
I've introduced a new bit on this pod. Continue to talk, but I will let you know that the bit is coming.
Okay, so I have a Wolf-centric, just general observation. There has been one game where one of the big three, if you want to call them that, has scored 40 points that I can remember them winning. And that was the Hornets game I was at that they started Bielitsa. And this is how probably it got in my head that Bielitsa maybe should start sometimes. But he had 24 points career high because I think he's playing with better players. Regardless, Wiggins had 47, I believe, in Levine's absence. And they won that game. Outside of that, we see a lot of these games, 47-18, I believe they lose to the Knicks. That's Towns. The game you were at that Levine went off, I'm trying to remember their opponent. But he had 40 points, and they
didn't win. I know that much.
Yeah, and so I wrote a short piece on this, and I think you referenced this actually. And by the way, go back. Was it your Monday pod that you had all these people in here?
Yeah,
the David Naylor and stuff.
Yeah,
go back and listen to that one, because that was really good. But you did reference my piece in that, which made me excited.
You're welcome.
But it was about. I mean, it was literally
check it out at coldomaha.com.
Yeah, I was at practice talking to doing reporting on Thibodeau and what he was saying, and he talked about connectedness, and I don't think this is a buzzword or he's just saying it to coach speak. I think he's seeing what everyone else who's watched a lot of these Wolves games has seen, that literally these guys, I mean, we said it 100 times, play Hero Ball or whatever, they're infinitely capable. I don't doubt that Towns can score 40 points and have excess of 10 rebounds. I don't doubt that LaVine can knock down shots like, you know, no tomorrow. Even in the right context, when he's being, you know, the people are being lax guarding him, Wiggins could get to the net and score. But they're not helping the team by scoring this much. They really do need to kind of all pitch in, or someone else has to step up if one of them's having an off night. I mean, what other game have they won where they one of these guys scores 40 points?
Couldn't tell you.
It's fun. It's exciting when they dunk. It's exciting when they do all this. I know people get sick of this kind of coach speak and stuff. I think Tibbs is serious when he's saying, stop doing this. Like, play within the context of the you know, the team defense or the team offense, because that's how we're going to win. We're not going to win if, you know, it's fun to see the highlight real stuff, but that's not going to, you know, help the team and put people in the building.
Well, the fun part was when the narrative, the whole, does Towns need to do more narrative happened.
No.
And then Towns went and scored 40 and they lost. So
no.
Towns do less.
This is going way back on the scope. This is a sports-centric problem, is that often when a team is not doing well, the best player gets blamed, and it's often not the best player. I really think that the Wolves have something here. I do think they need a big man. I think that they need to kind of reassess how their bench is playing, and maybe kind of some of the roles of their best players. But at the end of the day, it's just these guys have to figure out they can't put it all on their shoulders. And I think even Towns has gone away from this speak of it's on me, it's on me, it's on me. I think eventually he's got to realize he's got to be speaking more like a guy like Gorgui Dieng, who's saying, guys, just like play. You know, Gorgui Dieng always seems to be saying after games, and I don't know if these are just the games I'm at or if he says the same thing when you're there. But
he doesn't ever talk when I'm.
Oh, really?
No.
He's so great. Like when I don't know. Maybe I'm just lucky that I've seen him at his best. But regardless, he's like, hey, play within the defense, please. You know what I mean? Like,
I have heard him say.
Yeah, that. You know, it's like listen to Gorgui. He's right.
Are you ready for the newest bit?
I'm scared mostly.
It's called Zach Reads the Schedule. Because
somebody
on Twitter pointed it out that I go into a ramble about the schedule. So we've added some music, and now I will read the schedule. The Wolves will go on the road, taking on the Philadelphia 76ers beginning tomorrow, January 3rd, in Philadelphia. Will Joel Embiid play? I hope so. Philadelphia Sixers, as Tom Schreier knows, is my favorite team. After that, they've got 3 days off. I don't think they'll come home. Between now and then, but you never know. They go to Washington, D.C. to play the Wizards on January 6th before coming back to play them on the very next night, the Utah Jazz at home. Tom Schreier will be there covering the game on behalf of Cold Omaha. Of those games, how many winnable?
Philadelphia for sure. Washington's a mess, right? Washington's at a point where some people are calling that they should, like, trade Wall. This music is loud.
This is Zachary's The Schedule. We're dedicated to the bit.
I listened to the podcast that you did this on, or brought up the bit on. But I mean, they should beat Washington, right? There's some call.
Well, they should have beat Portland without their best player, but.
I know.
That's why I'm asking you the hard question.
And I think I'll be covering that Utah game. I'm excited. You've been hogging the Utah games, or maybe there's just one.
No, there was just one, but I am a fan of the Jazz. I conceded this one in our schedule making.
So excited. I don't think they'll beat the Jazz. Looking at the standings, they're third now, fourth. I can't remember.
The Utah Jazz.
Yeah,
I have the standings pulled up. I pulled up the schedule.
Yeah, they created some separation. They are the fourth seed, 21-13. Thunder 21-13 as well, the fifth seed.
Well, the Jazz are fourth. Yeah, you're right. Holy buckets!
The Jazz could be an upset team. I don't know. Again, championship caliber. I don't know, but aren't they a team that could screw someone in the playoffs?
7-3 in their last 10. I definitely think they are. The question is, how far can you get in the postseason if Gordon Hayward is your best player?
Yeah, and that's a little bit. We talk about kind of good things Detroit's doing and stuff. Detroit seems destined to be kind of like the Hornets or the Jazz, where you have a good product every night, but not necessarily like a championship caliber.
Detroit's 11th in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. True, but
let's not let facts get in the way.
No, I'm just saying, like, even if Van Gundy sees his vision through, I don't think they'll ever be that great, just because they don't see, I mean, Drummond's the best player, right?
Yeah.
He's a good player, but not a game breaker.
And Van Gundy has been fun. I'm going on a tangent here. He's been fun because he's speaking out on political issues, specifically.
Did I tell you the quote he had when he was here?
Go on.
So someone made up something that apparently wasn't sourced, right? I mean, there's these people, right, rumors online who just say stuff that kind of makes sense.
I'm just letting the music roll. I don't care.
That's fine. He goes, yeah, you know, fake news originated in the NBA. He's like, jeez. I don't know where you guys got this. You guys are pulling thoughts out of my head that I didn't even have. But, yeah, so he didn't go really political, but did mention fake news, which would be sort of political.
He did an exclusive interview with Sporting News. Sportingnews.com has it up today. And he talks about his stance and how he'll continue to use this platform to speak out for what he believes in. And I think that's commendable.
I loved him. Because we interview both coaches, the first time I was in the interview, he was terrible. And I think he just had a bad day. I was laughing my ass off. This dude is funny. And you can tell him and Tibbs are buds. I am curious if the Rockets can pull off we just don't play defense, but we think we're going to win an NBA championship.
They can't rule it out.
Very analytics based, right?
I've done that before. The whole Mike D'Antoni team that doesn't play defense thing.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not in on that again.
Yeah.
I mean, did you see Harden's stat line the other night though?
Yeah, the 50-15-15, right, or something like that?
Yeah.
That's absurd.
On New Year's Eve. I mean, in a drunken stupor, Tim Fakeless tells me that stat line, and we're at Morrissey's in Uptown on New Year's Eve. It's like 11:30. And I'm like, where's my laptop? I need to torrent this immediately. So that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, so interesting team. I still maintain the Wolves. They need to break this spell at some point. I mean, does this last all season? Do they struggle in the third?
I think Mike Brody, as he talked about on last Monday's pod, said that he thinks that they've turned a corner. But after that, I don't know. I don't let this team make me feel feelings anymore. I thought it was an impressive win they had against Milwaukee, albeit they allowed Milwaukee to shoot over 50%.
But that's a bench thing, right? I mean, they have to have some scoring off their bench.
Well, they have to play the bench, too. And we're, you know, I can't wait to have Britt Robeson on this week because it's as if he wants to just see what these guys have, this young core, and see what they have and wants to know what their weaknesses are. And then he wants to let them know what their weaknesses are by leaving them out there all this time.
So two thoughts. Actually, John Kaczynski had an interesting point on his podcast. He said he really thinks Tibbs is basically coaching as the GM, right? He's basically saying, I want to know everything. This is why Tyus isn't playing more. This is maybe why Levine's not playing with the second unit more. And I know
he's playing with the second unit often.
Well, he's playing with everyone. He's always playing.
That's a good point. He's last night, he was the first sub to come off the bench. Shabazz Muhammad comes in.
But he could play the starters less. There's certain things that he could do. But I think he really wants to assess the Rubio Levine or Dunn Rubio situation, basically where his starters are at. Although I still think it's important, he needs to know what he's got in Shabazz Muhammad. Is Shabazz Muhammad struggling because he needs to change the scenery, or is he struggling because he's not on the floor enough to gain?
He's struggling because he's the same damn player he was when he came in.
I think that's why I feel like it's the former rather than the latter. I really think he needs to change the scenery and someone else maybe to kind of. I know he's had a whole bunch of coaches here.
Nice game last night. 5 of 11 shooting, 2 of 4 from 3.
And a great
points,
game against Milwaukee.
Positive 6. Yeah, sure.
Talked
to Seth Partnow, by the way, Bucks director of analytics after the game. That was fun.
That's right.
Fun times.
Hardwood Paroxysm?
He was Nylon Calculus. Okay, Seth Partnow. Yeah. I mean, anybody listening to this pod at this juncture in the pod knows who he is.
Yeah. And he's Milwaukee's...
He's now Milwaukee's director of analytics. Moved down from Alaska.
Wow. Yeah, so I mean I
Carleton College grad, believe it
nice,
or not.
Nice. Like John Bonas, Twins Daily.
Sure, yeah. Why not?
But anyways.
And there's some new addition. The Wolves have made some new additions to the analytics department team. A couple of former, well, at least one former Hardwood Paroxysm contributor. I cannot mention his name yet because the announcement has not been made official, but awesome. He is a future guest on this pod.
I will say this about Tibbs, and I've said it before, but I think everyone should observe this for themselves. It is crazy how he can go from the maniac on the sideline to in a huddle, you never see him yell, or maybe in the beginning, but even compared to other coaches I've seen, he tends to just snap into this like analytical X's and O's guy, and then he goes into the press conference, and with the exception of the Hornets game where he literally looked hungover, like he was so mad after that game, which they had screwed it up. Like,
well,
they,
he can't stand losing to his boy Steve Clifford.
Yeah, right. But outside of that game, he literally goes from this maniac to just like a normal guy who's just breaking down basketball. And in fact, he does like 4 minutes of just recapping the game. And then he'll do like another 4, 5, 6 minutes of like in-depth basketball talk. And I'm like, I don't know how you can do that. Like, he just compartmentalizes every part of this. I'm just fascinated by him because I think he's a great coach. And I think that combination is very important, that he's not allowing the emotions to get away from X's and O's and good basketball thoughts. And I think this is why he's someone who would value analytics, which is very important.
There was a funny moment after the Bucks game where Britt asks if Bielitsa plays better with the starters, and Tibbs just sort of sits back in his chair and he started laughing. He goes, it's a good question, isn't it? And I'm sitting there to myself, well, does he sit there stewing in his, you know, just brooding over whether to play Bielitsa with the starters? I don't know. But it's like the laugh makes me think that he does ponder that.
I think it's two things. I think he plays better with the starters because he plays better with better players. However, with a better bench unit, maybe he would be that much better on the bench, right?
God, he's just been awful.
But even that whole game, especially in clutch times, they were missing threes that they should hit, or they would do weird things. Like Rubio is off on the, like, I think this is in the fourth quarter, off by himself, or I mean not by himself, but no other of his teammates, you know, a guy guarding him on the 3-point line, and no one came to get the ball. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, what are you guys doing? Like, why is Rubio taking a contested shot from far out in an important part of the game? And so there's certain things, and I think that's the stuff that drives Thibodeau up the wall, right? I'm sure he's said 100 times that they're supposed to do something different, and they don't. But yeah, going back, so do you think this lasts all season, or do you think, I mean, I'm looking at it, how many games have they played? They're 11 and 23, so 34 games. I mean, we're getting to the point where looking at halfway through the season, we've seen the same thing for most of the games.
I think they'll play better in the second half of the season, I have no doubt. But keep in mind, this team has been remarkably healthy for the minutes that they play.
Yeah, and something's got. I mean,
don't you think that something would happen? I mean, if you're going to enter the realm of discussion where you're predicting how well they're going to play for the rest of the season, don't you have to assume one injury will keep a player sidelined for a couple weeks? I mean, no team sustains this type of health for an entire season. I mean, their biggest injury has been Rubio. He was gone for like, what, five, six games?
Not only that, but I would assume someone on the bench, aside from Tyus Jones, who I think has done this, is going to establish themselves and say, hey, I want to be part of this, right? you joined your Burger King there? I think someone else, you know, Shabazz Muhammad or someone like that, may step up and either say, hey, I want to, you know, get traded and go somewhere else, or I want to get paid and be part of the solution here. I think they should have probably invested in the bench more. Brandon Rush was a bust, and I think everyone thought he'd be a lot better. The other thing, too, is you could run yourself into trouble like Portland did, where they overpaid for a whole bunch of players. Now you kind of have this team at the cap ceiling that isn't that good. So as much as Tibbs will have to invest in the bench and invest in kind of filling out this team in years to come, he's probably smart to wait until maybe he works out these kinks with these young players. Because I got to imagine at 24, 25, these guys aren't going to be playing the minutes they are right now. I mean, he's going to run them into the ground otherwise. But
in relevant bench news, and we'll talk about this more tomorrow. You in on a pod tomorrow? You down?
Yeah, I should be available.
The Wolves will pursue, according to Mark Stein, an injury retirement deal with Nikola Pekovic 1 year after his last appearance, which was January 31st, which, as I hope you've been listening, I've been saying for like 6 months.
Yeah. Now, why didn't they do that? Do you know?
Well, they have to wait a year after his last appearance before they can do that.
So, and my thing with Pekovic is, if he was healthy, that's the kind of player they need. I don't know. How do you find a big guy like that, right? I mean, you're probably just bringing in some big bodies and seeing if anyone can play, but that's the kind of guy they need. If they're going to make a big money investment in a player, I think you go get, I don't know who's available, but someone to put this.
Well, and another relevant news, Dontis Manayunas, they had him. He was here. He was in Minnesota.
Oh, really?
He was going to work out for the Timberwolves, and his agent was like, nah.
Damn it.
Had him fly to New Orleans. I don't know. I told Patrick Fenelon that I'm good. I'm good on that. I don't want the drama. I don't want it. I mean, he's a nice player, and obviously it says something about him that Tibbs would bring him in for a workout. I'm good. I don't need that.
Yeah.
I don't need that crap.
What was someone had asked on Twitter last time I was on the podcast?
And these are two talking points for tomorrow.
Yeah. Nerlens.
Happy New Year. I know there hasn't been a show in a couple days, and it's my bad, but New year, new times, you know, consistency, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, New Year's resolution. Do things.
Do your fucking job.
It's literally, Fenelon's going to come here with a stick and prod you like he does on Twitter.
Do stuff.
That's my favorite thing.
We got to wrap this up. We're 45 minutes.
No, do we want to talk about Nerlens then tomorrow? Because someone
yeah, we'll talk about him tomorrow.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, you're roped in for tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks, Margaret. I know she's not on the phone anymore, but it was nice having her on, getting some Portland insight.
For Tom Schreier, here we go, TSCHREIER3 on Twitter. My name is Zachary Bennett. This has been the Locked On Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. So long.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.